Heather McDonald has got the juicy scoop. When you're on the road, when you're on the go, Juicy Scoop is the show to know. She talks Hollywood tales, her real life Mr. Segment Serial Data and Serial Sister. You'll be addicted and addicted fast to the number one tabloid real life podcast. Listen in, listen up. Woo, woo. Heather McDonald, Juicy Scoop.
Hello and welcome to Juicy Scoop. I have another fabulous comic. Brad Williams, you have done it all. You have a special coming out.
Yes.
You've been everywhere. You have a million shows.
Yes.
Welcome to Juicy Scoop. Your first time on Juicy Scoop.
I'm popping my Juicy Scoop cherry, and I'm very excited about it. A bunch of my friends have done it. I've heard it's great. This is a lot like the first time I had sex. A lot of my friends have done it, and they told me how awesome it was and how great it is, and now I get to experience it for myself, and it'll probably be over way too quickly.
I love it. Now, I mean, a lot of people, you're very recognizable. A lot of people know you. You've had several specials.
Yes.
You have one coming out December 21st that you can watch on Veeps.
Veeps, a brand
Explain what Veeps
new
is.
Service. And before you say, like, oh, I don't have the money to pay for another streaming service, it's okay. Veeps, you go on there. It's specifically for concerts and comedy specials. A lot of bands do it. It was started by the Madden Brothers from Good Charlotte.
Oh,
and,
cool.
And so let's say you want to sit in your jam jams and be on the couch and watch a concert. Great. They got a lot of concerts, but they also have comedy specials. I've got one. It's called Starfish. Came out on December 21st. Why did I choose that date? Because that's the winter solstice, the shortest day of the year. Get it? Okay. Marketing.
Yes.
Marketing. Shortest day of the year. It's not a short special, though. But yes, really happy for it. And go to Veeps and veeps.com/Brad Williams and watch the special. And when you get it, the money doesn't go to a very large corporation. No, money goes to moi. And that helps me raise the Asian dwarf baby. I say Asian dwarf baby because I'm a dwarf. My wife is Asian. We made a kid together. Asian dwarf baby. So, yeah, I don't know if it's
how
a kid
old
or,
is, how old is she?
She's going to be four. She's four on January 13th. And I'm digging it. I like this age. She can talk. She can laugh. She can respond. She can tell me that she doesn't like something, which happens all too often.
Yeah.
And it's fantastic. So I'm really enjoying being a dad right now. It's
That's
great.
That's so awesome.
Yay. I didn't know if I'd like it. I didn't know. Like, I didn't. I thought, you know, most comics were very, let's be honest, narcissistic, and we're into ourselves and our careers and everything like that. Don't have time to put someone else first. But I'm digging the whole when I come home. Like when I come home, let's watch Bluey. Great.
Yeah.
We're gonna do that. We're gonna sit on the couch. I'm gonna have a tea party. It's great. I love that part of it where I get to be the sort of pseudo celebrity on the road and then come home and I am nothing. I'm just dad. It's great.
Now, right before we started, you said that you have a nephew that now knows that you, his uncle,
yes,
might be a little bit known.
Yes.
How old is he?
He's nine. And
yeah.
Apparently some parents at his school are letting their kids watch my stand-up, which I don't advise. I'm not going to curse too much on this pod, but in my stand-up, not something that a nine-year-old should consume. I'm doing theaters now. You can get all my dates at bradwilliamscomedy.com. And theaters don't check IDs the way comedy clubs do. So
yeah,
there's a lot of parents that bring their like 11-year-old and be like, yeah, this is my 11-year-old. He loves your stuff. And I'm like, he shouldn't. No, I'm talking about things that probably morphing his brain. But some of the kids in his school showed him a clip and said, oh, look at this funny comedian. And he goes, that's Uncle Brad. And everyone's like looking at him like, Uncle Brad, what? And so now he FaceTimed me last night, and I got a whole bunch of autographs that I got to do and photos. And I'm basically doing a cameo service for my nephew where I'm like, all right, hey, Barry, what's going on? It's comedian Brad Williams, uncle of Liam, and, you know, just doing the whole thing. So it's interesting. He's finding out, and he's seeing videos. He has checked out my Instagram now.
Where does he live?
I'm not going to give away that information.
But I mean, not in
all good.
Not in this neighborhood, or not.
Not in LA.
Okay.
But LA adjacent.
Okay.
So
okay.
People are into the show business thing.
Got it.
And Yeah, he is getting a little bit of popularity from it, and I'm fine with that. I'll help the kid out. I'll do all the cameos. I'll wish little Aiden and Jaden and Caden happy birthday. they're all these Aiden, Jaden, Caden, Saden rhymes. It's madness. But I'm stoked for it. I like the fact that my nephew now, like, oh, that's what Uncle Brad does. Yeah, I go up in front of the hundreds, sometimes thousands of people and act like an idiot. It's great.
Well, I had a similar story, but it's like the opposite.
Oh, no.
So my son is a junior at ASU.
Okay.
And one thing I do for my, you know, so the other day his friend called him that he met in college, you know, knows college, and he goes, dude, I came home to my mom's house and I'm like, why is Drake in my house?
Yeah.
And he had our Christmas card. And he's like, wait, how is this? Well, my Patreon people get a Christmas card from my family.
Okay.
And his mom is a fan of mine.
Oh.
But he had no idea that his friend that he met in college has a mom who's a stand-up that his mom follows.
Oh, wow.
And so he's like, why the hell do you know this guy that I golf with at ASU, mom?
Right.
And she's like, oh, your friend with Drake? That's Heather McDonald's son.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, that's a whole
thing. Other generation now. Yeah.
It's pretty amazing because I've heard interviews with, like, rock stars, like huge rock stars that I love, and they talk about their kids like, oh, yeah, my dad's a Metallica.
Yeah.
I'm like, your dad's a Metallica. That's madness.
Yeah,
why aren't you, like, doing cartwheels every day? But it's just, no matter who it is, it's just, like, once I'm not, you know, I'm Uncle Brad. It's no big deal. Most of the time, the family, you know, people come up to my wife all the time, like, oh, is he funny all the time? And then my wife will just roll her eyes, like, tries to be. tries it. It's just the normal. Like, it's just, she's around it all the time, so it's not really special to her. And I'm sure Metallica's kids are around it all the time. It's like, yeah, Dave Grohl comes over sometimes, whatever. And it's like, Dave Grohl comes over! Ah! Like, I'm freaking out. And now I'm sure your son's just like, oh, wait, that thing that I thought mom just did in the basement.
He knows.
Now
he
knows.
Well, he always, they've known for a while, but they didn't really, like, now they're like, they're adults. So they're like, you know, my one son's a senior in high school, the other one's a junior in college.
Okay.
So now they're like, they're part of it, and they even read the mean stuff too, which is
kind of
funny.
Do they laugh at it or do they take it personal?
No, we kind of laugh at it.
Okay, good.
Because I'm like, God, some of these people are really funny. Some of these people that hate me are like fucking hilarious.
Sometimes they're good. sometimes I see a joke about me and I'm like, all right, that one was actually solid. That's the thing. People ask me all the time, like, oh, do you like dwarf jokes? Do you hate dwarf jokes? And I go, well, I built a career on it, so kind of like them. But I just don't like bad ones.
Yeah.
Like if I post one more tweet and someone puts in the comments, that joke came up short. You think you're the first guy to ever write that? Oh, I came up short. I had Method Man tell me one time I came up short. Cool your jets, all right? That's not an original joke. But if you come up with an original one that's like, holy crap, I've never heard that before, I'm all about it. A fan said this the other day. It's not really a joke about me, but I looked at it like, this is genius comedy. I always refer to tall people in my act as reachers. I call you guys reachers because let's go to the supermarket, you'll find out. And you guys are reachers. And I had a fan. I have to be very careful when I say this word. You will understand in a second. He said, no, you should refer to tall people as biggers. With a B, hard B, biggers. And I was just like, that is so funny. Oh, my God. Oh, all these biggers out there. Like, that's hilarious. So I'm actually going to take that one from a fan. But very rarely does that actually happen.
What is the proper name?
For tall people? Average size?
I call them talls.
Yeah. Reachers?
Yes. No, like, what do
for
you...
Oh, for me?
Yeah, because, I mean, it's like... Is it little people?
Yeah,
is it dwarfs?
Yeah.
What do you prefer?
Dwarf or little person are the ones that won't get you in trouble. Midget's the one that gets everyone in trouble. Don't say that one. Me personally, I'm all about intent. I'll tell you this story. I was in Odessa, Texas, and I did a show. And during the show, there was a guy that had to be kicked out of the club.
Being an asshole, being too drunk, or both?
All the above. And I'm sure you've gotten this. Sometimes you get people, they're yelling stuff out, and you slam them a couple of times. But then when they keep going, it's like, okay, now we can't keep doing this.
Yeah, ruining it for everybody else.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we had to kick them out. Show goes great. At the end of the show, I'm walking with the opening act to our car, and we see headlights turn on from the parking lot, and it's a pickup truck, and the pickup truck starts racing across the parking lot. A guy leans out the window and yells out, "Kill the dwarf!" Yeah! So at that point, I didn't stop and be like, well, thank you for using the correct terminology. It wasn't the dwarf I had a problem with. It was more the kill the that I had slight issues with. So thankfully, we hopped in the car, and my buddy who was driving, who was the opening act, he knows the trick of, like, you go and do like a dirt kind of field, and you do some donuts, and then it kicks up a bunch of dust, and then you can't see, so then you just drive off then, very Dukes of Hazzard. I grew up in Orange County. I did not know he grew up in Waco, Texas. This is a trick that apparently they learned there.
And that you have to learn, apparently. That's kind of scary.
Yeah. And my opening act that I was with that night is black, so he was just like, oh, wow, someone's chasing after someone, not me. This is great. If the car had caught us, the guy would have been like, hey, we're not here for the black guy, we're here for the dwarf, which is like, oh, he would have been so relieved.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, yeah. So you grew up in Orange County.
Yeah, Orange County, California.
Tell me a little bit about your life, siblings. What's your story there?
First of all, only dwarf in the family. So when people be like, oh, so your father and mother? No, you don't drive down a street in Fullerton where we're from and say, where did Brad grow up? Oh, it's the mushroom with the door in it. Like, that's not the case.
So did she know?
Yes.
Before she gave birth?
Yes. Yes. But fun fact.
Yeah.
Our doctor did not tell my mom that I was going to be a little person. They knew. But they didn't.
The doctors knew.
Yeah, doctors knew, but didn't tell her for a while because a doctor, a strict practicing Catholic, thought that if he told her that your son's going to be a dwarf, that she would
end the pregnancy.
Yeah, end it. And so he didn't want that to happen. So he waited a little beyond. So it was like third trimester. But they knew before. Fun fact, medicine.
And how did they tell her?
And
how was that? What was the reaction? Where are you in the family? What child?
I'm the baby. We're the Cleavers. It's mom, dad, sister, brother, and dog. Like, that was growing up. That's what it was. And I was the baby in the family. And so they told her, yeah, your son's going to be a little person. And my dad, awesome dude that he was, he started going to these meetings that are LPA meetings, Little People of America, and he would just sit in the back and he would listen to all the little people gripe and
wife is pregnant.
Yes.
Okay.
And just like, okay. And then one day he stood up in a meeting and he said, hey guys, I've been coming to a few of these meetings. You guys are just really angry. You guys are just very mad, and I'm about to be a father of a little person. Is there anything good? Is there anything good? Or is this just all suck? Is there anything good that's happening? And one dwarf came to my dad and said, yeah, everybody remembers you. Everybody remembers you. Everybody knows your name. And now it's kind of interesting that I'm a stand-up comedian, because when people see me, no one just goes, oh, yeah, that guy, the white guy, he has the... No, everyone just goes, oh, yeah, the midget comic. And everyone knows who you're talking about. And I'm fine with that. I'm totally fine with that. So it sort of came full circle that way.
And so how old were your siblings were you when you were born?
Pretty much Irish twins with my sister. So, yeah, I remember they came home and they were like, hey, you know, her name's Katie, and they're like, hey, Katie, this is your baby brother. And then the story goes that she burst into tears and was like, put him back. It was like very angry. But now me and my sister have a wonderful, great relationship. It's the it's her son, the nephew, that has now figured out that I'm popular. So it's great. And
how was it growing up in Orange County?
Wonderful. I'm not this guy that comes on and goes, oh, I grew up such a hard life. It's like, nah, it was pretty good. Orange County was good. I will tell you the thing that made it good is my dad realized that as a little person, when I go to school, I'm probably going to get picked on a little bit. I'm going to get bullied. So what my dad did is he would bully me first, but in a very supportive way. He would like make fun of me and then tell me, okay, hit me back with something. Hit me back.
Oh,
and
wow.
So I would like, we would actually write jokes, write comebacks together.
As you were like in elementary school.
Yeah.
That is awesome.
Yeah. So then when I got to school and a kid made fun of me, I was like, oh, I've trained for this moment. I'm good. So now I would have comebacks and I would say them to the kids. And then a couple times I got sent to the principal's office for having the better joke.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it's kind of like, now when a heckler yells something out, I'm like, I'm fine. You don't think I've heard Lucky Charms before? Come on, dude. Like, come with it. Come strong to the hoop. So I'm fine in those scenarios. It's sort of.
So I mean, when did you realize like that I have a knack for performing and writing and comedy?
Very young. Very young, because I was always doing plays, and I was always doing like high school as an improv comedy. Like, I don't know exactly the moment, but another thing my dad taught me is so my dad.
What'd your dad do for a living?
Lawyer. Okay. And a successful one. And so I'm good. I didn't grow up like, we didn't grow up wanting. We're fine.
Uh-huh.
So my dad always told me that whenever he was giving his depositions and arguing and stuff, he would insert jokes because it really lightened the tension, made him more memorable, and made him appear in a more favorable light. And so he kind of taught me, he's like, hey, when you meet someone, joke really fast, joke. So then they know that that you're comfortable and you're fine. And I was like, oh, that's good. And man, does that work. Like, because
yeah.
if I meet someone and they don't know who I am or I'm a comedian or whatever, I could tell sometimes people are nervous because they're like,
yeah.
How do I bring up the elephant in the room? Is he cool with it? Are we allowed to? Like, so I will constantly, like, I'll break the ice with a joke, just a quick thing, and then they'll understand, like, oh, he's fine. Like, when I started doing comedy, I would do dwarf jokes almost immediately, because when I would go on stage and not do dwarf jokes, the audience would sit there kind of very uncomfortable. Just kind of look around like, does he know? And I'm like, yeah, I'm aware. So now I come out, I make a joke real fast. They know I'm cool with it. They know it's okay to laugh. Now we can move on to other topics.
And how old were you the first time that you got up on stage or decided I want to try to do stand-up?
19.
Uh-huh.
I was 19. I'm 39 now. I'm entering my 20th year in stand-up comedy, which, wow,
and what
that
was your
weird.
First experience?
Ooh, first experience was a good one. First experience, I was in the audience at the Brea Improv. There was a comedian on stage, and he started making midget jokes. Did not know I was there. And half the audience is laughing, and the audience that is sitting by me is like, like not
yes,
laughing.
Yes, yes.
And as you know, if half the audience is laughing, you know, okay, what's happening over here? So the comedian looks over and goes, what's happening? Like, you guys aren't laughing. And he actually says, what, is one of them here? And I just went, yep, raised my creep little hand in the air. And he called me up on stage. And he started asking me questions. He didn't make fun of me, but he was just asking me questions. I answered the questions honestly. Was not trying to be funny at all. Just
do you remember some of the questions?
Yeah. He said, what do you do for a living? And at the time, grew up in Orange County, I worked at Disneyland. So I said, I work at Disneyland. And the audience laughed. And then I turned to the audience and went, shut up, I'm not one of the seven.
Yeah.
And that made him laugh harder. And I was like, ooh, that felt good. That felt real good. So then after that experience, making
who were you,
the audience
who
laugh.
Who were you with that night?
I was with my dad.
Oh, my God.
Yeah,
had you gone to, had you grown up watching a lot of comedy or going to comedy clubs?
Yeah. Not going to comedy clubs, but just watching a ton of comedy. Yeah. Like, my dad introduced me to, like, Jonathan Winters and Robin Williams and the Smothers Brothers. And, like, I was aware and, like, Eddie Murphy Raw. I watched Eddie Murphy Raw when I was like 15.
So did I. Well,
never laughed so hard.
Let me see. I mean, I went to the movie theater.
You went to the movie theater to see it?
I'm older than you, so I went to the movie theater to see it.
Oh, wow.
And I remember just being like, I mean, I definitely snuck in.
How was that theater? Was it just like rolling? Like, was
I just remember thinking, this is the funniest. Is the Raw one the one where you got an ice cream and then, or is that the one before
that's
it?
That's Delirious.
Delirious.
Delirious is
The Delirious was the ice cream one, which was its joke that he had about
the red suit.
Yes. And then
that's Delirious. Raw is the purple suit where he talks about McDonald's in the end.
Yes. And that one was a more sexual, I think.
Yes.
A little more dirty.
Yeah. Some of those jokes won't fly today.
Yeah. Yeah.
some of the jokes about
about
the gay guy on top of the cop car. Not going to fly. He doesn't say the word gay.
Yes, yeah. Now I'm remembering. Okay, so you have that first amazing moment.
Yeah.
And you start to go, okay, this feels good.
Yeah.
Now, at 19, you're working at Disneyland. Are you a full-time employee? Are you going to school, or what are you doing?
I was going to school at USC.
You were? That's where I went.
Yeah, fight on. And you're a Trojan?
I'm a Trojan.
Didn't know that about you. All right, now we got this kinship.
Yes.
Did you graduate? I did not.
Yes, I did.
Okay,
I
good
did.
For you. Congratulations.
Okay.
I was going to school, and then when that moment happened, I was like, I'm going to try stand-up. And
did you really have to quit school?
Yes. So at that point... I did comedy and school for about a year and a half, and then I got an opportunity to go on tour as Carlos Mencia's opening act.
Wow, then, only after a year and a half.
Yeah.
That is awesome. So how did that come about? Did he just see you?
He was the guy on stage where the full first moment happened.
That is so cute.
Yeah.
That is so sweet. I love that.
And then he saw me about a year and a half later.
And he's like, holy shit, you actually have chops.
Yeah, he saw me at the Ontario Improv about a year and a half later. And he goes, hey, I remember you. And I go, yeah, I started doing comedy. And he goes, you started doing comedy? And this is during the meet and greet of the early show.
Uh-huh.
And he goes, do you want to do a guest spot in the late show? Just from there. And I was like...
You were just there to see him.
Yeah, I was there to see him.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I go, okay. And I go on stage. I do like 3-5 minutes, whatever it is. And then got off stage. And he goes, holy crap. I put you on stage because you're a midget. That's kind of funny. But you actually had jokes. And he goes, what are you doing next week? And he was playing the Fox Theater in Bakersfield, which I'm playing in February.
Oh,
so
awesome.
It's all coming full circle.
Aww.
But... Yeah, and then after that, I just started going on the road with him. So he had just gotten Mind MNC at that time and was doing
which
a big,
is TV show. I remember that, yeah,
big national tour, and he wanted me to be the opening act. So that's when I came to my parents and I was like, "Hey, you know that?"
Because you were gonna be gone for a while.
Yeah, I was gonna be gone.
And how was that being on tour so young with like and playing these big
massive
venues?
Crowds. Yeah, it was amazing. It was trial by fire for sure. And he's had awesome comics open for him, like Cristela Alonso, Steve Trevino, Joe Coy, like all these comics. Like Joe Coy is selling out stadiums.
So he really
now.
Knows. He has a real eye for comic, and he really helps support his opening acts, which is really cool.
So, so it was a trip I loved, but I also got just introduced to the road lifestyle and what it is, and I don't know if this happens to you. People always ask me, like, oh, so when's this tour done? And I go, when I'm dead. Like, that's when I'm off tour. If people ever come to my house and see my suitcase, they're like, oh, are you just coming back or are you just heading out? And I go, yes, to both, because I'm always doing stuff. Now, this next tour coming up.
It's huge. You have 2024, so many dates.
Yeah, literally 70 cities, and that's just until July. And now we just announced some more dates. We're going to announce some more dates.
And now what's the deal? When your agent calls you, do you turn anything down? It sounds like you don't.
It's like I come from a point where when you were the opening act or when you were starting off, it was like I didn't know. I was working one night. I didn't know when the next night was that I was going to work. So you said yes. You say yes to everything. And then it's really hard for me now to turn down work because I still have that mentality. And especially, like, I remember driving from L.A. to San Jose to do the San Jose Improv, to do a middle spot for a different comic. I made, like, $400 for two shows, and then I drove back that night because the club didn't get me a hotel. So that's 6 hours up, two shows, pound a Red Bull, 6 hours back, $400, $100 was on gas. So, like, I remember that.
Right,
so, when I'm coming from that, and then they say, hey, they want you to play the whatever theater, you know, they want you to play Terre Haute, Indiana, and I say, okay, I've never heard of that, but and they tell me the amount of money, I go, cool, we're doing it. And then, thankfully, Terre Haute showed up, and they sold out the first show, so we got a second show there. But, like,
awesome.
Yeah, 70 cities, we're going to announce... we're going to announce more countries.
Do you bring... Oh, you're doing other countries?
Yeah,
where are you going?
We're going to go to Australia. We're going to go to...
Have you ever been there?
Yes. I've done comedy there, but I'm going back now. And we're going to do England, and we're going to do a tour of the UK. So, yeah, all going to be next year. So, I really love my wife and kid. I would like to see them in the year 2025. So, see me on this tour. 2025, I'm not going to be going out that... much.
That's the plan.
Yeah. So I'm going to be home more because I'm really a big fan of my wife and kid. I'd like to see them more.
Now, in your growth of becoming a stand-up and being so recognizable.
Thank you for saying growth as a dwarf. I never hear that. It's so nice. Woo! Getting the vapors. Okay.
Like TV things that I saw you did Reno 911.
Yeah,
have you been offered through the years when people like us were getting development deals, and what's your sitcom and anything like that?
Yeah, most of the stuff that I'm doing, I always really just focused on comedy. I got to do some amazing stuff. Got to do, the Reno 911, It's a Wonderful Heist Christmas movie. Got to do my absolute dream job. I don't know if a gig will ever be better than this. I got to work with Christopher Guest on a movie called Mascots, which is on Netflix. And I did a scene with Fred Willard.
Oh, my God, how amazing.
And he's just... If you're familiar with how Christopher Guest movies work, they are improvised movies. And you have a basic outline of the scene. They say, all right, it starts here, it ends here.
With Reno 911.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Very similar. Same with Curb Your Enthusiasm. Yeah. And that's how Christopher Guest works. And I was like, cool, I'm going to improvise a scene with Fred Willard. And at the time, Fred's may have been in his either late 70s or early 80s. And I go, okay, so I got to carry this scene. I got to be like the energetic one because Fred's older. Nope. Fred was so over the top that if you watch the scene, I tone it way down and I'm playing the straight man because I'm like, oh, Fred's the crazy one. And because he's a damn genius and... shame on me for thinking I was going to steal the scene from Fred Willard. No, not a chance in hell. Genius man, even nicer human.
I met him at some stand-up charity thing, and he was so sweet.
What a sweet man. So, that was the dream gig. There's a couple other acting gigs that have come and gone, but for the most part, and I especially learned this with the strike that just happened, I like being a comedian. I like being in charge of my own stuff. I feel like if you're funny, you'll always work. Will you work in the ways necessarily that you want to? We never get what we think we deserve, but you'll work. If you're really good, you'll work. I don't want to be determined on a casting director somewhere to be like, yeah, that's what we need. I just want to be able to control it. Now, I got a few things in development right now that are very exciting. If they go, great. Wonderful. I'll be thrilled to work on them. If they don't, I'll do stand up.
Yeah.
And that's what I love, because you go on stage and you crack a joke and you get that immediate feedback, and then, you know, I do a meet and greet after the show. I'll even do the meet and greets for the theaters. It'll take a while, but I'll do it. And I mean, it's hard for me not to wanna say hi to these people at the end of the show. They're paying my mortgage. So
yeah.
So thank you, everyone, for coming out to the shows.
And what's like the most heartwarming or of thing that happens when someone comes up to you after that you how you've touched their life or their children's life?
This one. I might get emotional even telling the story, but I'll try not to. There was a guy who came up to me and he handed me some military patches and some pins and a coin. He was a man. He was with two sons. And he said, "Here." And I go, "Oh, what are these?" And he goes, "Oh, well, these are my patches. This is my medal. This is my..." And I'm like, "Whoa, that's your stuff. Like, you earned that. Take it. Take it back, please. Thank you, but take it back. That's your stuff. I didn't serve." That'd be really bad of all Dwarf Army. And I say, "So please take it back." And he goes, "No, you don't understand. These are my sons. If I don't find your comedy, they don't have a dad right now." He goes, "I was on the brink. I was about to end it all. I was literally was sitting in my room and with a loaded weapon, and I was about to end it. And randomly, your stuff came on Pandora, and I laughed. And that was the first time I laughed in forever. And I put the gun down, and I kept listening to you, and I kept laughing. And that's when I thought, yeah, I can keep going." And he's telling me this in a line, and I'm just like,
I have like chills all throughout my body. That is so amazing.
Yeah, I've heard stuff like that. That's when someone comes up to you and says stuff like that. I did the Montreal Comedy Festival, and there was a little person there who came up to me in the hotel. And he's like, "Brad Williams." And he comes up to me and he says, "Dude, I just got to say, thank you so much. Like I started doing comedy because I saw you do comedy and I heard it and I started doing comedy." I was like, "That's awesome." And he goes, "Yeah, and this year is my first year at the Montreal Comedy Festival." And I was like, "Oh, damn. Like, he got accepted into the festival and he started doing comedy from watching me do comedy." It's like, that's when it puts in perspective, like, oh, I'm just doing this.
Because it's just like anything else.
It's a job.
Seeing an image of yourself on TV or in a profession that you didn't normally see an image of yourself doing.
Yeah.
It's a really important, and it makes you go, oh, well, that person looks like me and they're a doctor, or that person is,
representation,
you know, a comedian
is very
or
important.
Acting, or so why shouldn't I be able to do it now?
Exactly.
So, yeah.
And those are the things that really get me when I go, oh, it's not just me on stage every night telling jokes. Now, when I think back to my heroes growing up, you know, your Robin Williamses, your Jonathan Winters, your John Elway's, throwing a sports reference. The way I looked at them, now someone can be looking at me that way, and that's a lot of pressure, a lot of responsibility, but then also a great motivator, because you don't want to let them down. So
I remember being like 10 and watching Eddie Murphy on like a call-in show, and he was already, you know, somewhat famous but young. So it was like on SNL or whatever, and somebody called in. It was a woman, and she's like, "I just want to say, I always said if I ever had a chance to talk to you, I would." And she goes, "If a couple years ago was the worst day of my life, my son had died that day, and I said, I will never, ever laugh again. And I turned on the TV, and you were doing Gumby, his character of Gumby.
Yeah, SNL, yeah.
And I just remember being very young, being like, I don't know, it just really hit me. Like, I can remember, like, yesterday, being like, if you can have a gift or a career or something that can make someone laugh on the worst day of their life, where they said, I'm going to either end my life or never want to laugh again.
Yeah.
That is when people say, why do you do it? I like literally decided, because I knew I was like funny young.
Yeah.
I didn't know how, when people would say, like, my teacher in high school was like, I don't know why you're going to USC. You should be a stand up. And I was like, I know I imitate all these teachers and stuff. I didn't understand how strangers would find me funny.
Right.
I didn't get that there's a process of setting up a joke and explaining a little bit.
Of course not.
And then, and so I, And then when I was in college, like, I was like, oh my God, like, everyone would come down and want to hear, like, the recap of the night in the sorority house. They'd be like, did we miss, you know, Breakfast with Heather? And
oh,
I remember going,
so
how can I make this a career?
Yeah.
I just want to recap a night.
And then look at this. Figured it out. You figured out how to make this a career.
It might take a minute, but that's, it did work out.
That,
yeah.
That's so great. And now we're living in such a wonderful time where, for anyone listening to this going, well, I have this... I have this weird skill like that nobody really knows about. How do I make money on it? You can. I'm on chiropractic TikTok all the time.
Do you love chiropractic TikTok?
Love chiropractic TikTok.
My favorite is the Cot OC chiropractor. I went to him. Have you been to him?
Yeah. I haven't been to him yet, but I've seen him.
But
he's cute, too.
I know.
Damn cheekbones.
But you know what? I have a thing where I'm like... I literally watch it, and I feel like it relaxes me. I think it could be psychological.
Yes. The exact same. I watch chiropractic TikTok videos of just people getting their backs cracked. And I've talked to my chiropractor. Yeah, I go to a chiropractor about it. And he goes, you know, they fake the cracking noises. And I go, I don't care. I'm a fan of pro wrestling. Okay?
Get so off on. And also if, like, my sons.
Yeah.
You know, because some people just have a more crackle back. Like, if my son is like... and I'm like, oh my God, thank God you let me hear that. And I even used to, you know, when like the bubble pops that come and stuff? Yeah. I used to just go like, I'd do it to myself. I'd act like just, it's such a weird thing.
It's a weird relief.
And I remember I asked Dr. Drew, I go, could I be addicted to like back cracking and hearing back cracking? And he's like, would you leave your family for it? And I'm like, I guess no.
No.
He goes, no, it's not an addiction.
Okay.
So I'm like, okay, it's not.
It's something that makes you feel good.
But it is a little weird. But I'm glad I'm not the only one.
It's a little weird. But thankfully, the thing that makes you feel some relief isn't anything that's damaging to other people. You know? So it's fine. It's not self-destructive. No one ever.
But do you like cracking other people?
I don't, but I like being cracked.
I like
watching it.
I like both.
So you crack other people.
I'm a versatile.
Okay.
I like to crack and be cracked. And I used to like, I'd crack my kids' backs too.
Really?
And then I just.
Do you do a thing where like you pick them up?
No,
you know,
I lay them down and I just go like that. I do the breathing thing and I lay them down.
Okay.
And then, you know, and then I was like, is this like a little weird? Because I remember like one time my son's like, I don't want to do that weird thing we do anymore. And I'm like, oh, gosh.
Oh, no.
This sounds really weird. Creepy.
Great. He's going to be in therapy in 10 years being like, then my mom told me to lay down and she cracked my back. Like some, like he's going to need physical therapy or
because like a little
chiropractor.
Kid, crackable back is like pretty great.
Well, they'll snap back. They'll fine. They're going to be okay.
It is, it's amazing, yeah.
It's so funny the things that you find relief in. My wife watches a lot of those, like, I describe it as, like, ASMR baking. Like, it's and you hear, like, every noise of the pan going in and the thing frying.
That's that's calming.
She watches that, and that cools her down. Meanwhile, I'm over here like, yeah, break his neck. And once someone explained to me, because the first time I got my back cracked and someone, you know, they did the neck thing, and I'm like, I died, right? Like, I died?
Yeah.
My head popped off. And you're like, no, it's literally impossible to do the thing that you see in the movies. Like, it cannot happen. Like, the amount of force that has to... And they did the whole thing. I'm like, okay, I'm good now. Like, once someone explained to me that, you know, all the Chuck Norris movies I've watched where he just goes, hurt, and, like, breaks a neck, he goes, that's not real. I go, great. I'm comfortable now.
Crack away.
Crack away. Go nuts. I'm good. I'm fine.
And how did you meet your wife?
Oh, I met my wife. You know what? Here's a juicy scoop for you. I met my wife on an app. I had to move to San Francisco to do a radio show that lasted about 3 months. I tried to do morning radio
for
3 months. This is like, okay, so we've been together for like 10 years. So yeah, like 2014, 15.
Okay.
Moved.
So you got offered a radio show. Yeah. You're like, I want this steady gig.
Yes.
Sounds great.
I want to get off the road. I don't want to be on flights every week. What I realized, the only thing I didn't like more than flights is waking up at 4 o'clock in the morning to be on air by 5:30. And then after you've done 4 hours of trying to be funny with no sleep than a program director who's never been funny in their entire lives sits you down and goes, okay, let's go through the entire show and every joke that you made and oh,
really?
Did you think that was funny? I go, yeah, I did. And if there was an audience, they would have laughed too. And it was not for me.
Oh my God.
God bless
I can't
the morning radio
imagine.
People. I love morning radio guys.
Now you don't have to do that. I kind of feel like that was one good thing I've talked about with this comedians that kind of died with COVID was not having to do the morning radio really anymore like we used to have to do.
Yeah. There are still a few guys and girls out there that even if I'm sold out, like,
it's worth it.
I still go in. I could go through them. The DVE show in Pittsburgh. Lewis and Kathy. The guys from Philly. Darn it, I don't know their names. But yeah, there's bunch of radio shows matter what, I will still go in. They're a blast.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I was doing morning radio. I didn't like it, but we had a bit on the air where we were talking about me meeting people, and because I didn't know anyone in San Francisco, so I would go on dating apps to meet people just as friends, just to be like, hey, I'm new in this city, I want to make a friend. Now there's literally an option on Tinder where you could like, no, this is not sexual. I just want to meet a friend. Now there's like, a friend of mine goes on Bumble all the time and just goes on friend dates.
I think that's so important.
It's wonderful.
I think it's so great.
It's so great. Yeah. But then I was doing it, you know, old school style.
Yeah.
But then a listener called in and suggested an app called Feeld, F-E-E-L-D. And I looked it up. And this is for, all right, get ready, listeners. This is for people that are trying to have threesomes.
Okay.
And multiple partners. All right, that's the sound of some of your listeners signing off and going to download the app. But, yes, this is a real app. I went on there. I matched with two women. We're all going to go out together. One of the women, last minute, didn't show up. I'm imagining because she looked at my profile and was like, oh, his whole body fits in the default photo. No, I'm good. And she didn't show up. But I messaged the other woman and said, all right, we lost one. Do you want to still go out? And she said yes. And two years to the day of that date, I proposed to that woman.
Do you guys do threesomes?
We have.
Oh.
Back in the day. With the kid, it's very difficult. And you're not really in the mood after you've been, you know, cleaning up shit all day.
Yeah.
So not really feeling sexy that you want to invite someone else in. But we used to. And it was a lot of fun. It was great. It was all, like, you know, both of us had to be really on board. There were times when, of course, I was on board and she was like, not tonight. I'm like, cool, fine. And obviously finding a partner, that's a whole nother deal. But
how would you find the partners?
Sometimes they would be at shows, at bars, just whenever.
Would you talk about it on the stage? Would people know that, like,
I have.
Would you hint kind of to,
I
like,
have.
Put the feelers out?
It's kind of cheesy to do that. But
Why not just kill two birds with one stone?
I did at some point. I feel bad saying that, but I did. But the thing is like, I'm a firm believer in whatever your kink is, your weird thing is. If it doesn't hurt anybody, if everyone involved is a consenting adult, great.
Yeah.
Let your freak flag fly. There's some weird stuff on Pornhub, Heather. Okay, there's some weird stuff.
I wouldn't know. I've never been on in my life.
Sure.
No, I really haven't.
Really?
I really haven't.
Never.
Never. I don't even know how to get on. Never.
You know how to get on.
No, I don't. What do you just Google porn? I literally don't know.
Google tits. Stuff comes up.
No.
Google, do you
like the only porn that I've ever really watched was like, really in the beginning of our marriage, we had Cinemax, and I loved that.
Oh, Skinemax. That's like softcore.
I liked that.
Okay.
Well, we used to just like, we would be like, oh, I think this was filmed near our house, you know, because we like live in the valley. And I'd be like, no, that's Northridge.
Yeah,
I know where that is in Northridge.
Was.
And but no, not now.
Now, you don't have to expose it, but like, do you have a kink or are you pretty
besides
just like
the back crack kink?
Oh, the back crack kink. Okay.
No, but like I mean
just missionary eye contact.
No,
you're fine.
But I think threesomes. I would never do a threesome, but I think a threesome is a pretty not freaky. Like, in this world, I don't think it's like that, like, oh, like, I don't think it's that shocking. It seems like a lot of people, myself, no, but a lot of people have partaked. And whether it's a one time, it seems like most people I know, if it's happened, it's it's Vegas. Balls a lot of
Vegas. Yeah, we had one in Vegas. Yeah, that was definitely one of them.
My friends are like, any friend I know that had a threesome, it always was in Vegas.
Yeah,
it was always, let's do it in Vegas.
And if you're a couple out there and you're thinking about it, I will give you this tip.
What are the tips?
Rules. Set the rules in advance. Set the rules of what you're comfortable with. Because there's...
So the rules could be what? Well, that you can, like some people are like, okay, you can't penetrate the girl, but you can penetrate me, and but the girl can do something with you, and I can do something with the girl, but you can't. So is that a common rule?
Yeah, that's a common rule. Okay. So find out.
And then other people are like, I don't care. You can screw the girl. It doesn't matter.
Yes.
Yeah. But you have to know that up front, because then it's like,
discuss that.
Yeah.
And also, when you discuss that, let's say your partner says, yeah, you do whatever you want with the other person. If you do, and then that partner doesn't feel comfortable, like they thought they were gonna be comfortable, but then they're not comfortable, have a safe word or something that you can say that when's like, whoa, thought I was gonna be good, not good, stop. Like, we have to have that.
Okay.
Because then it's not fun anymore. If one partner is just harboring these ill feelings while you're having fun, Not good. Not going to be fun. So the advice I would always put out is just constant communication with your partner. Make sure everyone is on the same page. Also, be on the same page for what happens afterward. Is this a person that, all right, you are not allowed to talk to this person anymore? Can you talk to this person anymore? Are they a friend? Are they just a random? Do they stay a random? Like,
and what is your suggestion? I would think it should always be randoms, and it should always be a one and done.
For the most part, that's safe. That's pretty safe. And
because God forbid someone starts hitting it off with the person, whether it's the girls start hitting it off or you start hitting it, then the jealousy. And...
Yes. And also, as a man, I will say this to the men that might be involved in one of those. If it's like a male and two female thing, it's not about you. Maybe it's your birthday and they make it about you, but it's not about you. It's not going to be like the pornos you watch where the girls are just like fighting over it.
They they've never seen a penis. Yeah,
yeah, it's not going to be that. The girls are there mostly to have fun with each other. Enjoy that.
Now,
happy that you're in
now
the room.
Now, would you ever do two guys and a girl?
I have, not with my wife. I've never done that with her, and I don't think I could be. I don't think I could do that with her. But I've been in one of those situations. That was interesting. Not a huge fan of those.
Right?
Not a fan. It's weird to be like having your fun and then you look up and there's just a dude just staring at you like,
Now, was that a dude you knew?
No. It was never a dude I knew.
I feel like all of this was after Saturday night show.
Yeah. There's been a lot of
you
after
did a Thursday,
shows.
You did a two Friday, you did a two Saturday,
and then stuff happened
that Saturday.
Yeah, and then
and when was
couple,
the flight?
Yeah,
was it with a flight later in the day on
Sunday 6 a.m. So you guys got to get the hell out of here. that helps when you have the flight to be like, hey, I know it's afterward and it's 3 o'clock in the morning and you guys want to stay over, but I gotta leave in an hour, so deuces.
I love your energy because that's like the last thing I want to do after five show weekend.
Yeah,
is to have to be doing a choreographed routine. Like nothing. So I'm just like, please let me get in my room and take off these heels and these eyelashes and crawl into my bed and watch Dateline.
Yes, and okay. So I would say that for women, I absolutely get that because you just said two things that I never had to do. I never had to take off the heels.
Or the lashes.
I never had to take off the lashes. So, like, get the face off. Once you add that step, I just come in and I collapse on the bed and I'm good.
Yeah.
You know, so, yes, once you add those steps, I could totally see why you're just like, no, I'm tired. I got more... like the show is done and then there's a whole process to get ready for bed. So I totally get it. Totally understand.
Okay, so I love it. So you have this special.
Yep.
Now, when you do a special, how many specials have you had?
I have two that were on Showtime, then were bought by Amazon Prime. You can still watch them there. They're called Fun Size and Daddy Issues. They're on Amazon Prime. Watch them. One on Netflix. That's called The Degenerates. That's a bunch of comics saying X-rated stuff, and we all do about a half hour. So technically three specials. This would be my fourth.
And once, like, you tape your special, are you one of those comics that are like, this is, I will never say this joke again for the rest of my life?
If someone calls it out during a show, I'll do it. I'll do a jukebox.
Like a bit, yeah.
Yeah, there's a bit I do about how I hate it when guys pee at the short urinal, because that's my urinal. Like, you don't think it's your, it's mine. Back away from it.
Yeah.
There's a bit I do about that some people call out.
Yeah.
I did a military joke about an experience I had on a Black Hawk helicopter where a guy had to throw me in. Dwarves don't like being tossed. Don't do that. But sometimes people call those jokes out, and that's fine. I'll do the bit.
Yeah.
If it makes you happy, great. There's a bunch of people in the audience that probably haven't heard the joke before.
Yeah.
Fine. But for the most part, like, so this special, it's all out the window. So when you watch the special and enjoy it and then go, we got to see that guy live, you're going to see all new material when you go to bradwilliamscomedy.com and see all the tour dates. And man,
let me
are
tell
they
you
a lot
what
of tour
you have
dates.
Going on.
Please do.
In January.
January.
So exciting. You're going to be in Santa Barbara.
Yeah, Lobero Theater. That's where I
Very
shot Fun
nice.
Size.
And then
we sold out the first show, and now we added a second show on.
And then you're in Sacramento.
Crest
I've done the
Theater.
Crest Theater. I've done that.
Yeah, sold out the first show, added a second one.
Love it.
Yep.
You're in San Diego.
Balboa Theater. Still a few tickets available for that one.
And then you're off to Florida, Tempe in February.
Yeah.
There's so many. So many dates.
And then I wanted to make sure that I hit in February. February 9th is the Fox Theater in Bakersfield. February 10th is the Ace Hotel here in Los Angeles, the theater at the Ace Hotel.
Oh, yeah. Awesome.
Beautiful theater. I saw Coldplay there, and now I'm going to be playing there. That's weird.
What's that date?
February 10th.
Awesome.
February 10th. So get tickets to that one. I want that one to be packed.
And
there's the Instagram.
It's Brad Williams Comic.
And as you can see, hanging out at 349,000 followers. So Juicy Scoops.
Oh, we're going
to let's get this up to 350.
Get you.
Let's get this up to 350. Let's get a nice even number. I'm a little OCD that way. I hate that it's at 349. Let's get it up to 350. Or if 9,000
yeah,
of you want to bail.
Yeah, let's do 360.
Yeah, and you want to go down.
No,
and you want to go down to 340, that's fine. Oh yeah, 350, 360. Let's get it up.
Well, thank you. I'm so glad you came. This
thank
was really
you.
Good to like get your whole juicy life story. It was very nice, inspiring, and hilarious. So
thank you.
I'm excited for your tour. It's going to be amazing.
I love it when fans come to my show and they tell me about all the other comedians that they support and that they love, and your name comes up a bunch. You have a lot of juicy scoopers that are coming out to my shows. And it makes me happy when people like other comedians, because it's like, oh, this isn't like, I don't want comedy to be like, I like this guy or girl,
right,
so now I can't like anybody else. No, it's comedy.
Yeah.
No one likes one band. Like all the bands. Comedians. Consume your show. Consume my show. Listen to podcasts. Watch everyone's specials. Find the comedians that speak to you, however they do, and enjoy their stuff. So, yeah, I really dig your fans. They're always very kind.
I have the best. I really do. I have the most. They're so supportive. They're so sweet. They're smart. They bring their family, they bring their friends, they introduce people, they share it. So I love it.
Do they bring you gifts? Do you get gifts?
I do get some gifts.
Those are fun.
I get wine. I get homemade food. And someone's like, you're not supposed to eat that food. I'm like, this woman, I know she knows how to make a brownie. And I'm eating this brownie. I'm eating this brownie.
It's fine.
Like, it's fine. It's all good.
What's the weirdest gift you've ever gotten?
I don't really get anything weird. I get good stuff.
Yeah, I just got one that blew my mind. Sometimes people, one person on my keychain right now is a keychain that someone made, and they saw a photo of me and my daughter on my Instagram and like made it into a keychain.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, I've had that. That's so sweet.
Oh, it's the best. One person did a painting
Of
my daughter, which was
my gosh.
It's hanging in my house. So that's cool. Weirdest one, someone gave me a custom-made shillelagh.
It's like a musical thing.
It's an Irish death hammer.
Oh.
It's a weapon. But like they made it for me. It looks like a walking stick, but it's got a huge knob, and then they put spikes on the shaft of it. So now that's under my bed. So if you ever break into my house, you're gonna have a dwarf swinging a shillelagh at you. So yeah.
I think that's actually was a really good gift for you then.
Yeah, Irish death hammer, which by the way, if you're out there and you're starting a band, Irish Death Hammer, great name.
That is
great name for a band. Hope to see you at Coachella.
I love it. Thank you so much. Thanks, Brad.
Thanks, Heather.
That's awesome. Let's do a.